Welcome back. This is the fourth weekly installment of Jade's Sunday Afternoon Low Tea. It is Monday, December 10th. Once again, not on a Sunday. And today's topic is about fatigue, because there's plenty of that going around here right now. Very gray outside where I'm at in DC. It's been gray pretty much all weekend. Very gray. The girlfriend is getting better. She had to go to the doctor. Turns out she has some odd bacterial infection that she can't remember the name to. It may have something to do with the whole house burning down thing. She may have breathed in something odd while she was cleaning. So the doctor gave her some very strong antibiotic, which is kind of making her ill in its own right. So she slept a lot and is, you know, I've been taking care of her still. And the grayness makes me want to sleep a lot. So there is that, which is why I pretty much didn't get around to the whole podcasting thing. I've been sleeping all weekend. And I think after this, I really do want to take a nap. But I don't know. I have a lot to do still. I've had the same things that I need to do all weekend long, and I just haven't done it. It mostly involves laundry and more laundry, some cleaning. It just tires me just thinking about it. And the bed is so inviting. I'm not actually drinking a tea right now. I'm feeding myself witch's brew. This is how I feel. I should probably get something caffeinated in me, but I've had double my limit of coffee, and it hasn't even touched me. My eyelids are barely open. First, a few corrections from last week. I'm just going to sort of throw these out in random order. A netbook is a PC. So when I said last week that I didn't have a PC, all I had was a netbook, that was wrong. That a netbook is a PC. When I think PC, I think desktop, which I don't have. Because the netbook, it's just so small. It's like a tablet with a keyboard to me. And I don't think the tablet is being PC. Is a tablet a PC? Oh, great. See, now I'm going to have another correction. Then people are going to be like, it's this or it's that or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, my camera in my phone is in megapixels. Oh, and the screen protector came late for my phone, and I was just going to put it on today. I had the case for it, and as we know, there was already scuff in the case. Well, checks. Apparently, I scuffed the screen last night because it wasn't there yesterday, and I was like, oh, look, I got the screen protector. It was later than the protective case, and I hadn't put it on this weekend, which is when I got it, and I was like, oh, you know, now that my girlfriend's going home, I will put the protective screen protector on so that my screen doesn't get scratched, and lo and behold, there is already a scratch on my screen, so I'll try to figure out some way of getting rid of it, I don't know, or making it less noticeable, because now there's really no point in putting a screen protector on my screen. There's already this big old scratch on it. I was very mad about that. I realized that my phone is not jade-proof. I made personalized ringtones for my most important people, one of which is apparently too low to really hear when it rang, so I'm going to have to adjust the volume on it somehow. I think I can do that. It took me quite a while to make those ringtones. I was very proud of myself. So I have personalized ringtones for like 5 people that I cut from songs myself and then got uploaded onto the phone. Yay! Yay, accomplishment. What was the other thing again? Oh yeah, I'm a giant snob. But I knew that already. I know what I like. What can I say? I know what I like. I'm a giant snob. Yes. I am a giant snob. I really, really am. I'm okay with that. Because everybody has their flaws, and I think my flaw is I'm a giant snob. That's okay. I really am. I'm not a snob in the traditional sense. What is a snob in the traditional sense? Hang on a second. I need to find out what a snob is. Hang on just a second. Turning to the internet now, as we are wont to do with the definition of snob. Now, I'm going to reverse these two definitions because I'd like to address the second one first. Second definition says, a person who believes that their tastes in a particular area are superior to those of other people. And the example they give is a wine snob. Well, I was never a wine snob because I never got enough chance to enjoy all the intricacies of wine, but I was a coffee snob. And I'm not allowed to drink coffee, and I can't drink coffee the way that I used to. So you lose that particular taste ability. I still knew vaguely good coffee from bad coffee, but before I could tell you about the roast and the beans, and I had developed this fine taste of coffee, and which I no longer have. Like, all the nuances of coffee are now lost on me. I am quickly becoming a tea snob. I should just start bringing my own little baggies and asking for hot water at places, because we were at this wonderful, it's a wonderful Japanese restaurant that I had taken my girlfriend for her birthday. She was sick on her birthday, unfortunately. It was actually a couple days after her birthday because she was too sick on her birthday to go anywhere. And so I had taken her there, and the only problem is this place has terrible reconstituted green tea. It comes from a powder. It's really vegetal and cheap. And so she's teaching me, you know, like how to say tea. She's like, oh, it's called ocha, which I'm probably not saying right. Or like ocha, I think is how she said it. And so I looked at her and I was like, so how do you say green water in Japanese? And she just looked at me. I was like, yeah. She's like, shrugs. She's like, yeah. She's like, you know, it's all just reconstituted. And I was like, yeah. It's like green water. Because this isn't tea. This is some crap. And I was like, I don't even know why I order it. I'm only punishing myself. I was like, you know the tea I have in my house. Like, I'm only punishing myself by going out to restaurants and ordering tea that they're getting in bulk for Americans. That she's like, they probably have good tea in the back that they serve for the employees and each other. And they just serve the crap tea out here to people that don't know any better. And I was like, yeah, I have no idea why I ordered tea when I go to Japanese restaurants anymore. And so on the other hand, there are places that have really good tea, even in D.C., but those places tend to make a big deal out of it. They'll actually have tea lists, like wine lists. You know, they make a really big deal out of it. And we weren't there for the tea to begin with. We were actually there because they had soba. I mean, you know, my girlfriend's from Okinawa, so she's been going on and on ever since I've known her about, you know, wanting, I guess it's a home memory for her about how when she had done good in school, her mom would take her out to get soba. She always associated it with like a warm fuzzy. So for her birthday, I managed to track down a place that serves soba. And I'd never had it before, so I had no idea if it was any good. I was like, oh, please have it be authentic. I knew it was good soup, but I didn't know if it was authentic soup. So, and it turns out it was. And I think she was fairly pleased. Like, as long as it was mediocre or better, I think she would have been pleased, just because it's not like DC is known for... It's getting better. It's not known for its food, but it's getting better. I am a food snob. An epicure. I'm an epicure. No, I'm a food snob. Life is too short to eat crap food, although there is something to be said for a chorizo dog. I haven't seen my chorizo dog in a while because I haven't been to stretch class, and that is my reward for going to stretch class, is when I get out of stretch class, I go visit, what is his name? Oh, it starts with an E and I can never remember. Is it Emilio? It's not Emilio. I can't remember his name. Oh no, I can't remember chorizo dog man's name. I'll have to ask him again. It's been so long, he's probably forgotten my name too. No, like, yes, I was on a first name basis with a chorizo dog man, and I'd be like, chorizo dog, con mustaza, con solo mustaza picante. See, he taught me how to say with only spicy mustard, because that's how I like my chorizo dog. So I learned something from the chorizo dog man. That I see. It's in Augie's Doggies. It's in Silver Spring. It's the first time in DC I willingly would eat at a street side hot dog place. Don't do this in DC. As a general rule, don't eat at any of the hot dog stands or at any of the street vendors that have actual food. You will get food poisoning and die. Just don't do it. This isn't New York City. There are some street vendors now that actually have food. Like some of the cheesecake ones are awfully good. And you'll know which ones those are because you'll see people lining up for them around lunchtime. But you kind of have to be a local to know which ones won't kill you. I once went up to a hot dog vendor and he knew I was a local. And I knew he was kind of poisonous, but I really needed a hot dog. Like, I really needed one. And I walked up to him and I ordered a hot dog. And he looks at me and he's like, "Don't you live here? Like, I see you all the time." I was like, "Yeah." And he looks at me and he's like, "And you want a hot dog?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, "Are you sure?" And like, the hot dog guy was like, kept asking me over and over, "And you really want a hot dog? Really?" And I'm like, "Yeah, no, really." And he's like, "Really?" And like, I'm like, "Yeah." It's like that. It's pretty bad. No. But all the Auggie's doggies I've seen are pretty good. You find them up around Silver Spring, which I realize technically isn't DC, it's Silver Spring, Maryland, but pretty much we kind of consider everything in the area to be like, people would just say DC. Oh yes, be very careful when you're booking your hotel because it'll say DC and then it won't be in DC. So you'll end up in Timbuktu. They just put everywhere vaguely in the DC region is a DC hotel, and that's so not true. You'd be anywhere. So make sure you're actually in the district if you're coming in from like way out of town. And for God's sake, don't go DC's tourist hotel. That hotel is the biggest roach trap. And it's like the one, it's in downtown and it is super cheap. It's like DC, actually it's not that cheap. Wait, no, that one isn't even that cheap. It's like DC's, they call it, the tagline is actually DC's tourist hotel. And that should really be a dead giveaway to people. That is the most roach trappiest hotel. I can't remember what the actual name of the hotel is. Oh, that hotel is sketchy. Anyway, moving along, away from snobberyhood, I am a snob. So as a foodie and as someone who likes to prevent food poisoning in all its forms and to prevent wallet robbing of tourists, if you're looking for something reasonable and you happen to be at the Smithsonian, the places you want to go are the Native American Museum has a cafeteria that's reasonable, and the Smithsonian Castle has like a little food court, which has got like a Mickey D's and a couple places like that. That's pretty much all you're going to find actually on the National Mall, unless they're having some event, and then you know, obviously you'll have tents and food and stuff like that. All the other little things, like the little food kiosks and stuff, are horribly overpriced, and the actual kiosks, some of their food that isn't packaged, I don't think I would really trust. I know we don't actually try to poison our tourists, but okay, maybe we do. It's possible. I could definitely see some disgruntled minimum wage workers attempting to poison the tourists after a minute. So your best bet is to go to one of those two places. Just a little word of advice. And they're both places where you can get reasonably priced things for the tourist area anyway. Now, the second definition of snob. Here we go. And I'm a giant snob, by the way, so here we go. And that is a person with an exaggerated respect for high social position who dislikes people or activities regarded as lower class. Now, I do have a lower class, but it's not what is generally considered to be the lower class. Like, it has nothing to do with socioeconomic status or education or financial level of wealth status. I look down upon people who have no desire to better themselves. In some way. It's got to be in some way. Like, it doesn't have to be in every way. You can want to better your life financially. Maybe you're just working really hard, waiting on that promotion. Maybe you're trying to go to school and better your mind. Maybe you're just trying to, like, become a better person. Maybe you're trying to take care of your health. Whatever you're trying to do, most people are striving, are trying. But when you get those people who are resistant, who are just actively, I don't want to try, I don't want to learn, I don't want to, you know, do anything like that, just leave me where I'm at. Well, hell, I'm going to leave you where you're at. And I shouldn't feel better than those people, though. But no, I am a giant snob, so I just can't stand it, though. It makes me, it's just like, wow. And I do, though. I do end up, like, there is a little part of me is like, at least I'm trying, man. there is a little part of me who does say, like, at least I'm trying. Damn. You know, so I shouldn't be like that. I should be like, oh no, we're all the same and la-di-da. But I can't help it. I look down. I'm human. I'm sorry. I look down at people like that. I just be like, I'm trying. I may not be getting anywhere, but I'm trying. Like, you, not only are you not trying, you ain't even trying to try. Like, you were resisting to try. Like, you were actively, like, fighting to try. You're fighting to not try. What is the deal? And I should just be like, they're not ready. It's okay to not be ready. And it really is okay to not be ready. But I just, oh, well. I'm just the snob. Oh, well. Whoops. Love me how I am. I guess, you know what? And I shouldn't even say that, because that means I should be a snob against myself. Because really, if I wanted to be a better person, I should try to be less of a snob. Okay, so that's what's up. So Jade will try to be less of a snob, because otherwise she's just a big old hypocrite. She's going to be snobby against herself. No, that's all right. I have caught myself in a catch-22. I'm a mess, aren't I? So, okay, so Jade will try to be a little bit less of a snob. Not less of a food snob or a tea snob, though. Jade likes good food and good tea and good drinks. Life is just too short to not eat good food and drink good drinks. Life is short. Do the best you can. If you enjoy something, enjoy it as much as you can. Because we're not around long enough to be stingy about it. You can't take it with you. All you can take with you is your experiences. So have the best experiences you can have. Speaking of which, fatigue. Or as I should be saying it,
fatigue.
I thought I knew what tired was. Unless you have a chronic illness or have had a chronic illness, you have no idea what tired is. Tired is this force. It's a monster. It's the enemy. It's not like anything you've ever experienced before. And I have an admission to make. I went to make myself a cup of tea, caffeinated, Earl Grey, in fact, and I took a nap. And now it's almost midnight, and I'm trying to finish up this podcast, and I fell asleep for like 3-4 hours, and I still haven't done laundry, and that's what happened. I don't exactly remember going to sleep. I was down for a little bit. I was brewing the tea. It was steeping, and I was just like, I'll just close my eyes for a minute, and then my tea was cold. So that's pretty much what happened there. This is just unreal. I have the closest I can compare it to was my first day of rugby practice. I walked in, I face planted under the bed. I was still wearing shoes. I literally walked in the door. I walked into my room. I face planted on the bed. I was renting a room at the time. My landlord said he almost went to wake me up to see if I was okay, like if I needed to go to the emergency room, because he'd never seen me do that before. And then he remembered that it had been my first day of rugby practice because I'd been so excited about and talking about it. And then he just figured that I would be fine. But apparently I'd walked right past him and hadn't actually seen him. Fatigue has taken everything from my life. There are some quotes. There's a quote I want to share from you that a friend of mine posted. Telling me I can't be sad because someone else has it worse is the same as telling me I can't be happy because someone else has it better. I don't know where that quote comes from, but I really do enjoy that. Whenever you have a chronic illness, it's really important to mourn. This is one of the things my therapist tells me. You have to allow yourself time to mourn. And of all the things I've lost, I think my energy is the thing I miss probably the most, but it's somewhere between energy and ability to think. When the nervous system is affected, your brain is part of your nervous system, but It's definitely one of those two. It affects your time, for one thing. Your time is gone. You sleep all the time. Your time is literally, you're gone. You can't get it back. And it's not just the time in the past. It's future time is now gone. So that's a hardship. When I look at all the time I had ahead of me and realize that these hours in front of me have also been taken away. It's like learning you're going to die in a year. Your future time is gone. In addition to which, I don't have the energy. In the time that I do have, the natural inclination is to try to push everything together in the time I do have, but I don't have the energy for that because of fatigue. So there are many facets of fatigue that I'm dealing with that cause me to mourn. And that is something that I do occasionally get a little depressed about. And that's okay, because it's okay to be depressed. It's okay to be sad about things. And yes, there are people who have it worse, but it's okay. Being sad allows me to mourn, and being able to mourn allows me to come to grips with the idea. And coming to grips with the idea allows me to move on. And people are uncomfortable with the idea of sadness. They try to cover it up. They want to cheer you up. They don't allow you to be sad. They don't sit with you in sadness. I think if I could want anything out of someone close to me, a close friend or a loved one, it's I would really like someone to be able to sit with me in sadness, to mourn with me, to just be there and be okay with me being sad. To not try to cheer me up. I don't want them to be in distress, like not that kind of like anxious distress. I don't want to cause them distress. I don't want to cause them anxiety. I want them to accept that I am sad. There's a difference between I don't want to be the cause of their anxiety. I don't want it to be an anxiety producing thing. It shouldn't be an anxiety producing thing. I had a talk today with a friend of mine who was like, you know, I worry about you. And I'm like, what is there to worry about? Well, you know, I worry about your health. And I'm like, my health has already failed. There is nothing to worry about anymore. You can worry about your health when you have health. When your health has failed, there's nothing to worry about anymore. There's only managing your failed health. Like my health has failed. There's nothing to worry about. It's gone. No more health. So you just manage your lack of health. It's like saying, you know, I'm worried I'm going to get cancer. Well, if you have cancer, you don't have to worry about getting cancer. You have cancer. You just have to manage your cancer. Now you have to deal with it, but you don't have to worry about it. There's no point in worrying about my health anymore. I don't have it. I want someone to sit with me in sadness and to mourn with me, to just sit quietly and to accept that I can't do. I wish that when I was looking at things, when I am feeling my fatigue, that there was someone with me who could feel my fatigue and not be anxious or distressed by it, to just accept it with me. I have, for the most part, I have come to grips with having it, but fatigue is a hard thing for other people to understand. They think they understand what tiredness is, but they really, really don't. And it's a hard theory to get. One of the greatest analogies I found, and one of the most popular ones, is called the spoon theory. And you should look it up. If you haven't heard of the spoon theory, you find it on a lot of chronic illness websites. People will talk about how many spoons do you have today, or how many spoons do you have left, or I'm out of spoons. Like spoons, as in forks, knives, and spoons. The spoon theory was written by Christine Miserandino, and I don't have permission to read it, so I can't, because she sells posters about it and such, so it specifically says don't republish this in any way, so I can't go over it, but it's on her website, butyoudon'tlooksick.com, and it's spoon theory, and it's an analogy that's been used under similar analogies. Basically how do you use up your resources. But how I like to phrase it when I talk about dealing with fatigue is, if you've ever run a race or done any extreme running, you hit that point. You hit that point. Sometimes they call it the wall, and then they say if you run through it, you hit euphoria. But I've never actually hit euphoria, so I have no idea what you people are talking about when you say runner's high, because to me, running is just a miserable experience from beginning to end. Either way, there's this point that you hit where all of a sudden your legs are moving, but it feels like you're going in slow motion. And your legs, you're trying to move your legs, like you're willing to keep moving, and it doesn't exactly hurt, but your legs just refuse to move forward. Air is like really thick. They just won't go forward. Well, I wake up like that some days. I call it molasses days or the heavy air days, where it just, everything takes this extra effort and the air feels thick and heavy like syrup. So when I raise my arm, it feels like I'm moving through syrup, invisible syrup. So I get really tired very quickly, and I'll start to pant and be out of breath. And people will be like, you're out of breath already. Your cardio is really bad. But it's just, I'm having a syrup day. So everything I do takes this monumental effort. There's also a thing called delayed fatigue, which I get a lot, and people really don't understand this. Some days I can perform very normal activities, like a normal person. And people will be like, oh, you must be all better, but I'm not. What they don't see is performing normal activities for a day means I might sleep or be bedridden for several days, because my body doesn't have the ability to recover as quickly as a healthy person would be able to. And the fatigue just drags me into bed. I think that's what's been happening lately, because I've been trying to exercise. And I pushed myself the other day. I walked 2 miles. I can't believe I used to do a 5K like 3 times a week. And sometimes I'd walk home from the 5K, which would be 6 miles total in a day. I would try to jog. Like I'd do a walk jog thing, 5K. And then I would walk home. I pushed myself to like walk 2 miles, but it was a really slow walk. It was not a brisk 2 mile walk. It was a stumbling, shambling 2 mile shamble. And at the end of it, oh, I thought I was going to die. I think I took a break in the middle even. And then I slept for about 2 days. I got up briefly because the cleaning lady was over in the morning, and then after she left, I couldn't keep my eyes open, and I slept. I was going to take a nap, but it turned into a 5-hour nap, and then I got up long enough to eat my health shake, which was dinner. Well, I didn't really eat before then, so it was breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and then I took my medicine, and I went back to bed, and that was a whole day, basically. It was up for a couple hours while the cleaning lady cleaned, and then up for an hour to eat and take my medicine and go back to bed. So I think I was up 4 days in 4 hours in 24 days. Or I'm sorry, I think I was up 4 hours out of 24. I was going to completely edit that last section, but I left it in to show you just exactly what fatigue does and what fibromyalgia or any chronic illness can do to your mind. You lose the ability to think, and it's not just from tiredness, but it is also from tiredness. Fatigue. I'm exhausted. I have been completely exhausted. So today, I think I'm not going to do the regular meta prayer. There's this little piece that I wrote that I would like to share. Someone liked it so much that they copied it word for word on their wall. It was inspired by a quote that was, I will love you until infinity runs out, which I liked. And it inspired me to write a little blurb and it about love, about commitment and what it means. And so I think I would like to share that with you instead of the meta prayer. Of course, I always want you to have loving kindness towards yourself. But I also want people to understand each other. Loving each other and loving ourselves all go hand in hand. So I'm going to share this with you as our closing lines. And don't forget, next week we have a real life tea. So I haven't decided how the podcast exactly is going to work out, whether I will incorporate the podcast with the real life teas or whether next week we'll just skip the podcast and go on to the week after. So we'll see how I'm feeling. But here is this little piece I'd like to share based off of I Will Love You Until Infinity Runs Out. I wish more people just understood what this means, what it says, what work it entails, what the commitments really are. This isn't my daydream, this is my flesh dream, my swift thought made real, hammered with love and iron and stone. First it says, I see you. Not the play you, or the fake you, or the work you, or the day you. The everyday you. The sick you. The morning breath can't stay awake you. The person underneath, the person you pretend to be, who feels small and insignificant when faced with the world outside. How can I say I love you until I've crawled into the cracks of your being? How can you say you love me if all you see before you is the shiny gloss of mirrors reflecting what you want to see? I acknowledge your faults, your hard edges, the things about you which grate against my nerves like a half-tuned note. I acknowledge them like sunlight gives me cancer. Your mistakes give off the same warm glow I bask in. I delight in your humanity. Pour the wax of my molten heart into the desire of your flaws. Suck the juice of your life between my teeth and spit the pits at all obstacles. I am your tomorrow, and you are my today. Peace, everyone. Wishing you a lovely week ahead, and I'll see you next time.